that music this morning. Can only mean that Scott Petrak is on the line with us from the Chronicle Telegram, Browns beat reporter. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing pretty good. Month of August, every day, something new with the Browns. It's a different rhythm than it is during the regular season. Let's see. Yesterday, Josh Gordon back on the field for the first time. And then why are our DBs wearing boxing gloves? What's going on?
Yeah. That was kind of interesting. I didn't notice watching it live. I think they were like the warm-up boxing gloves, but the NFL is making an emphasis on not to grab the jersey at any point. They used to be a little lenient with if you gave the receiver's jersey a tug as he's coming out the line of scrimmage, but they're going to make a point of emphasis not to do that. So that was one of the coaching techniques he used yesterday.
What impact do you think that'll have come game time? Do you think we'll see even more higher scoring games?
Yeah, I do. I think it's just kind of surprising to me because every rule that I can think of in the last 10 years has been slanted toward the offense, and this is just another one. Because they're going to focus on that, they're focusing on defensive holding and illegal contact after 5 yards. And part of it might be people have theorized that in the Super Bowl, Seattle's defensive backs, including Richard Sherman, kind of beat up Denver's receivers and didn't allow Peyton Manning to have his normal game. And I think the NFL likes to see offense and likes to see its quarterbacks have success. So that's just another thing that the defensive backs can't do. So I think in the preseason especially, you're going to see a lot of flags for defensive holding, illegal contact. The question is, will the refs still call it once we get to the regular season? Because it'll slow down the game. It'll lead to more points, a lot of first downs, you know, because those are all automatic first downs. Do the officials have the guts to continue to call it in the regular season?
Sounds like something like that could lead to more frustration for the defense, which in some cases sometimes could cause more retaliation that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to learn to live with it. They've made rules like this in the past. I mean, you know, 30 years ago, you could hit a receiver anywhere on the field, and then it became 5 yards, only within 5 yards. And that was a huge change, and really maybe the biggest rule change I can think of in the last, you know, 30 years off the top of my head. So I think defensive backs adjust. If you're a coach, I think you know that defensively, we're not going to be able to shut people down completely. And offensively, if you face a 3rd and 10, let's throw it up and see if we can get some kind of crap penalty call to keep the drive going. Yeah.
I like the way you said that, because a lot of times you try to, you know, using a penalty to get yardage, that's really a cheap way of, you know, but it happens, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the news. I guess Josh Gordon was on the field, then it was, you know, involved in a phone call, and now we're just going to wait, I guess, right?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting that the process continues to kind of drag on. And I know the Browns want resolution, and, you know, I guess if the resolution is satisfactory to the Browns, then they won't complain about having waited months. But, you know, there's a report that it'll be 1 to 3 weeks before we get a ruling. That's taking to the end of the preseason almost. And, you know, you like to set your rosters. You'd like to have an idea what your game plan is going to be week one. And there's no way the Browns can know what their game plan is week one without knowing the status of Josh Gordon. It's completely different with or without him. He's your number one receiver. He's your number one skill player. He may be your most talented player on the team. And if he's there, you can do a whole lot of other stuff. Everybody else slides into their slot on that offense. Jordan Cameron can just be a tight end. Andrew Hawkins can just be a slot receiver. Miles Austin and Nate Burleson can rotate at that number two receiver spot. If you take Gordon out of the equation, you got to bump everybody up to kind of an uncomfortable spot. I think you have to run the ball more. I think you have to focus more on defense and special teams and keeping the score manageable and the game manageable and hoping to make a play in the fourth quarter, where Josh allows you to open up everything. So, you know, hopefully the NFL will have some resolution sooner rather than later. It doesn't seem to me outlandish to think they should be able to get it done within the next week. We know, at least I think we know, all the facts involved. The NFL for sure knows all the facts involved, and I know Josh's side of the argument. So I'd like to see it get done maybe by next Monday at the latest.
Now, it's been a limited time that you've seen him, but is this having any impact with his on-field performance?
Yeah, I think it is. And, you know, you talk to his teammates, and they say he's trying to keep a stiff upper lip, and he's still joking around. But I didn't notice it yesterday as much. He wasn't out there a ton. But in that first week of practice of training camp, to me it looked like he was distracted. There were a couple plays where he gave up on routes. He didn't jump for one ball. I thought he could have made an easy catch. He stopped one route. It turned into an interception on a Brian Hoyer pass. So not that he always busted it, even when he wasn't facing a suspension. I mean, that's been a knock on Josh since he's been here, that he sometimes loafs during practice. But I thought you could tell that he was obviously distracted, which to me is just human nature. So I think if this gets resolved, and let's say he continues to practice and maybe the suspension is only, let's say, six games, if it happens to be that, or if it's no games, then I think you'll see a focused Josh and a re-energized Josh, which would really send a jolt of energy to the Browns, especially because if you add a guy like that, let's assume the Browns are thinking to themselves, okay, we're not going to have Josh Gordon. If you add last year's leading receiver to your team, I think all of a sudden you think, man, we can win three more games than we lost, than we won last year. It's an instant jolt to the whole organization.
Scott, I remember a year ago, there was a lot of talk when Chud took over how training camp was better organized. I think the word used was crisp. And now I'm hearing it again under yet another new coach. Do you notice a difference from one preseason to another?
Well, you know what? I think that's a good question. I think you can. I think in extreme circumstances you can. I did not notice a huge difference from Pat Shurmur to Chud. I know people like to pick on Pat Shurmur. I did not notice a huge difference. I would stand there with people pointing out, look how much faster it is. And I could see maybe a degree of speed difference, but I didn't think it was night and day by any means. And I'll tell you what, this year, and I think it has a lot to do with being the first year of a coach's program, which the Browns are always seem to be in, right? They had the first year of Chud. Pat Shurmur's first year was coming off the lockout, so he never coached his guys through the offseason. Everything was new. So that was a tough circumstance for Pat. But in Mike Patton's, to me, there seems like a lot of downtime. Not that they're not getting their work in, but you go a long time into practice before you do the 11-on-11 drills. Get a lot of installation of the offense and defense, which I think is natural to a new coaching staff. And you get a lot of individual work. And I think all that needs to be done. But I don't notice an increase in tempo. I think if you're watching Chip Kelly in Philadelphia, you would see speed, 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 because they're trying to get a playoff every 18 or 20 seconds. You don't have that here. The Browns are in the huddle for a long time between plays. So I think it's organized, and I think it's a well-run practice, but I don't see any jump in speed or intensity.
I've also heard another report. You talk about the installation of the offense, installation of the defense. On offense, I heard a report that when it comes to terminology in Kyle Shanahan's offense, sometimes the play is up to 18 words. Is that so?
I believe it is. And, you know, that's – some people want to criticize that, and I understand why. Does it need to be that long? If you look at – I hate to go back to Chip Kelly again. But in Philadelphia, like you did in Oregon, there are like three or four words. They show pictures on the sideline, which conveys formation or whatever it conveys that the guys can get in and out of the huddle in a hurry. Kyle Shanahan's an old-school coordinator. His dad's been in the league forever. His dad was a head coach. His dad was an offense coordinator. And if you have a complicated offensive scheme, then it's going to be a complicated play call. And I think North Turner's was pretty complicated last year. I think, I know Chud, when Chud was the offense coordinator here and twice before, he had complicated play calls. I think that's just you grew up in that system. That's the way it's going to be. And obviously, it's worked. Mike Shanahan won Super Bowls in Denver. They've had success using this. But if you're a rookie quarterback like Johnny Manziel, who didn't have that any kind of system like that in college, it's night and day. And we saw it with Brandon Whedon. He's used to practice in front of a mirror calling the plays just because there's so many words you have to get out. And if you screw up one of them, the whole play goes in the tank.
Do the words make any sense? I mean, do you hear them? Do you have any idea, or is it so? Is there like a separate code book to decipher all of that? How does it?
Yeah, I mean, you can figure it out. Like, for instance, this year it hasn't jumped out at me what some of the signal words are. But last year we had a lot of tiger, which would mean, let's say, two tight ends. And then if something begins with an R, if it's red, then the formation, the strong side of the formation, is to the right. So those kind of things are standard. So that lets you know right away if you're the offensive lineman or you're the tight end. Okay, red means I'm to the right. And you go through it, then you got to call every play for every receiver. And that's where the difference is between an offense like the one Kyle Shanahan's running and the Chip Kelly one. Kyle Shanahan breaks down each receiver. So the X has a route, the Y has a route, the Z has a route, and you give all of those in the huddle. Whereas Chip Kelly would say, let's say the play, to just make it easy, is red 53. And everybody would instantly know their job and what they're doing off of red 53. Now, I think the problem with that is that if you're the defense and you can break, that's an easier code to break. So I think that's why a guy like Kyle Shanahan goes through the whole process in the huddle with his quarterback calling it.
Scott, you mentioned Johnny Manziel. We've heard about this supposed quarterback competition. From your perspective, is there really a competition?
Well, you know what? That's interesting, and I'm struggling to figure that out. I thought a week and a half ago that there was no competition. It was going to be completely Brian Hoyer's job. Neither of them have gotten off to a great start in camp. I don't even know if you'd call it solid starts. I think both have been uneven performances, and the defense is strong, and that doesn't help the quarterbacks. And then in the last week, Kyle Shanahan comes out and says, nobody's in front. Mike Pettine says, well, we had to put somebody with the ones, so we put Brian Hoyer with the ones. And then Johnny Manziel was with the first-team offense yesterday. So I still expect Brian Hoyer to be the guy, but I'm not sure why there's been a public shift, and Brian Hoyer was way ahead a week and a half ago, and now we're not saying, now they're not saying it. I don't know if that's just so Johnny stays engaged. I don't know if that's because Brian Hoyer hasn't blown him away, so like, well, let's give Johnny a shot here, see if he can steal the job away. But I still expect it to be Brian Hoyer just because he's more consistent and makes fewer big mistakes. I think you see Johnny throw more interceptions, maybe more dumb decisions, and I'm not convinced he can play out of the pocket yet, which you have to do in this league.
Craig, you know, there was a big controversy over the weekend whether Mike Pettine said wouldn't or would say that.
Yeah, I was there for that. He said wouldn't.
Wouldn't. He did say that. Okay. What a little apostrophe could really change the whole dialogue that goes on there. That was interesting how people are trying to scrutinize something like that. So we're getting ready for Detroit. What do we expect as a first preseason game is upon us?
Yeah, I mean, the focus, again, will always be on the quarterbacks. Can Brian Hoyer come out, have a good start, lead a scoring drive or two in his limited time, kind of stake his claim to the job? How does Johnny do against an NFL defense that's trying to hit him? Will all those scrambling abilities and improvisational skills show up on the turf in Detroit, or will he take some big hits? You know, I mean, that's the big question, because he hasn't taken a hit yet, because they're not allowed to hit the quarterback in practice or even the scrimmage. When he's rolling out and they're trying to sack him, is he able to escape like he did at Texas A&M? If he is, then you got a chance for Johnny to do his magical stuff. If he can't, then he's going to get beat up and he can't play in this league. So, you know, we have to find that out. And then you get the running back battle. How does rookie Terrence West look in live action? And then is the defense really as good as it's looked in training camp and the Browns hope it will be? And they get a good test because Matt Stafford and Calvin Johnson and those guys are legitimate offense, high-powered offense in this league. So it's a good opening test. You know, the starters won't play forever. But, you know, I'm sure between Hoyer and Manziel, they're going to play at least a half, maybe in the third quarter, which should keep fans interested.
Right. It's good to have a lot of storylines when we get into preseason football, because sometimes the play after a while just becomes boring. But if we can see some progress, that's a good thing for that. We'll talk again next Monday after that and see how things have come out after the first preseason. Scott, thanks for sharing the time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Scott Petrek of the Chronicle-Telegram. You can read him every day as well, and then find out what's happening at Browns training camp.